If you've been enjoying listening to Consider Before Consuming, consider signing up to give $1 a month to support our efforts. Your contribution, whatever the amount, can make a significant difference in our efforts to educate individuals on the impacts of pornography. Sign up to give just $1 every month at ftnd.org/giveone. That's ftnd.org/give in the number one.
My name is Garrett Johnson, and you're listening to Consider Before Consuming, a podcast by Fight the New Drug. And in case you're new here, Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. We want these conversations to be educational, uplifting, and hopeful. As we sit down with experts, influencers, activists, and people with personal accounts, we cover a wide variety of topics that may be triggering to some. You can refer to the episode notes for a specific trigger warning. Listener discretion is advised. Today's conversation is with Barbie. She is a loving mother to 5 kids and is happily married to her husband of over 20 years. When Barbie was just 6 years old, she was exposed to pornography by a trusted adult. At the time, she didn't understand what it was, but she quickly understood what it would lead to, which was him sexually abusing her. During this conversation, we discuss how pornography played a role in her child's sexual abuse, how it impacted her life, and how she's been able to press forward despite the abuse that she experienced. With that being said, let's jump into the conversation. We hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming. I think it's important to give a little bit of rundown as to your current life.
Sure.
Because they need to know how awesome you are.
Thank you. First of all, I'll start off with my name so people aren't scared to call me my name. My name is Barbie, like the doll. Was born a redhead, named after a person, not the doll. My mom's friend from high school's name was Barbie, and so I'm named after her. I was born a redhead. So it made sense.
And today
sense.
You're not a redhead.
No longer a redhead. I'm a blonde and resemble the doll. So it's funny that that's my name now. Now that my parents thought that I wouldn't look like the doll, so it was safe. Not Bambi. That's often a mistake
often
people
confused.
Make. Yes. I'm not saying Bambi's a bad name. It's just not mine. My name is Barbie. I am the mom to 5 kids, 4 daughters, 1 son. And I have been married almost 20 years, so we're holding on, chugging along.
For sure, with 5 kids.
5 kids.
4 girls, 1 boy. That's a lot.
That's right. Best boy. He is the most patient individual that I know of. Yes.
That's cool. And then your husband is a doctor.
That's right.
Right, in the ER.
The emergency medicine physician, yep.
And then for fun, you guys, does he, I know you're into fitness. Is
I'm
he
into
also?
Fitness. He's, our the fitness that we like are polar opposites of each other. I do not like to mountain bike at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think it's crazy that you biked from Virginia to San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's like my nightmare. Like when I think of a nightmare, I think biking from
your house to the mailbox?
Yes, that's just too much. But my husband loves to mountain bike, and I enjoy more of weightlifting type of workout. So
cool. I haven't done CrossFit for like 5 years, probably, but I like
it's
it.
The best place to leave your anger. Just get it, leave
sure.
it there. Yeah.
Some good therapy.
That's right.
So now that we know a little bit more about you and the level of awesomeness that you've reached, can we jump into your personal account?
Sure.
I guess the first question to start with is, when did you first experience some of the harmful effects of pornography in your life?
I was just a child. I was roughly 6, 7 years old. I was exposed to it by the hands of another individual, which is often the case with pornography and children. My parents are the most charitable people and oftentimes would have families live with us, families with kids, sometimes not with kids.
It was your dad was a farmer?
My dad's a farmer, yeah.
Which brings some cool experiences as a child.
It's the best way to be a child is on a farm.
Cool.
Driving the tractors, started driving when I was 10, you know, so.
And your mom was a dancer?
My mom is a dancer, still a dancer. She grew up in the East Coast, and she had a studio. She did most of her training in Boston and New York, and she opened her own studio when she was, I think she was 18, in Massachusetts. And then she moved when she met my dad. My dad is from where I'm from, and came to to live here and opened a studio here. And I was, so I was raised in a studio, and I was raised in on farm. So.
You mentioned that you were exposed to pornography, but I don't think you mentioned who it was that exposed you.
Yeah, so my mom's, some family members of my mom's came from the East Coast to our home and lived with us for, we're not really sure how long they were with us, just because we did have families in and out of our home a lot. It was hard to pinpoint a time frame on it. I just know how old I was based off of my memories of school. And yeah, so I was exposed between the ages of 6 and 7. My uncle, but I don't refer to him as that anymore. I feel like uncle is a respectable term, and he's not a respectable man. He exposed myself, my sister, and my brother to pornography. He had a VHS, a box in the room that they stayed in our home, full of VHS. People who are predators, pedophiles, they can manipulate to the, they're just perfect at it. I can't, there's not even vocabulary for the way they manipulate.
Yeah.
But they are so good at it.
None of us are above that.
No.
Manipulation.
No. Well, they had all those, the gymnasts. The Nassar case, he had those gymnasts believing that it was okay.
Yeah, he would say that it was a medical treatment.
Yes.
Like and an internal treatment of the pelvic floor, basically,
is
what he would
say. Yes, which is crazy, especially having a physician doctor. I cannot imagine.
And the way that he finally got caught was one of his victims wasn't his patient.
No, the victims weren't believed. They told. They told. Well, and they weren't believed. Several that told. And finally one brought it to the paper, to the press somehow.
And she wasn't a... she wasn't his patient. So then he didn't have that excuse anymore.
Sure.
Anyway, the point is that none of us are above the manipulation.
Absolutely not.
Now, jumping to your experience.
Yes. As far as we know, my sisters and I even had a conversation just 2 days ago about this, just because I wanted to make sure I was speaking truth today. He didn't ever sexually abuse them. It was just me. And it, looking back, my little sister was too young. She was little, and she won't mind if I say this, but she cried a lot, and so she would have just cried. And my older sister was at an age where she probably would have said something. And so he targeted me because I was passive, I was shy, I was exactly what he was looking for. I was a very trusting little girl, and I think that's why I was targeted.
So he targeted you. From there, the abuse kind of started
right away. I just didn't have the vocabulary or the understanding of what sexual abuse was. It wasn't in the 80s. You didn't talk about it. It was not talked about. It was shoved under a rug, and that's where it stayed. So for me, it just wasn't something that I knew even existed. So he would tell me that it was fine, that what he was doing was okay, and it wasn't, but I didn't know that. So when he would hurt me with like a bruise, he's like, remember, I have to tell your parents about that. Or if your parents see the bruise, tell them it was from recess.
And for how many years did the sexual abuse last, from age 6 until?
Between the age of 6 and 7. We're not really sure how long, because when he moved, it continued to happen in the apartment that they lived in until they moved back to the East Coast. I don't remember how I felt when they left. I just know he threatened me right before they left. And so I just never said anything. I was, because I knew what he was capable of. I knew he would, at the time, I knew he would follow through with the threats. So I kept it quiet. I didn't really know what it was that he did. I know how it made me feel, and it didn't make me feel good. But sometimes other people don't make me feel good. So at the time, I just thought, oh, he's just another one of those people who won't let me play with him at recess, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I would express how I felt through my, I liked to draw and do art, and I would express how I felt through art. And I think I think if my parents kept all the artwork, it would really tell a story.
What do you mean by that? Like,
because sometimes when he was done with me, I would color a picture and it was me sad. Or a day he didn't touch me, it would be happy and I was in, you know, a field of wildflowers in the picture I would draw. So I think that and a lot of child psychologists will say, you know, artwork is really telling with children. And I think that with me it was. That's where I expressed that was my outlet.
And so you held on to this pain, but you're kind of unaware of it because you're so young.
Yeah, I mean, the pain was always there, but it was clear in the back of my mind. Yeah. I had no idea what he did was abuse. I really had no idea. I know that sounds crazy. I'm listening to myself thinking, that sounds crazy. It's
not crazy.
We need
to change that stigma though, right?
Yes.
Because it's common for individuals who have experienced abuse to not have the language or the knowledge to understand what is happening, especially as a child.
Not only that, in the 80s, you don't talk about it. I was the child that appeared to be perfect. I was happy. I really wasn't a sad child. In fact, if you were to look, an outsider looking into our family, we appeared to be perfect. You know, my mom and dad loved each other and had a good relationship. 5 kids who did well in school and were all healthy and talented. An outsider looking in, you would have never known that sexual abuse and pornography was in our home. You'd never known.
And then when did you start getting the language to actually talk about the abuse?
So I started to realize that what he did was sexual abuse when I was in the 7th grade health class. I think, can't remember which group came into our class, but something like the Peace House came into our class and talked about abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, and sexual abuse. And that's at that moment is when I realized, oh my gosh, what he did to me was sexual abuse. And that, but at that time, I did not know that the movies he was playing for me was pornography. I thought it was rated R movies. I was only allowed to watch rated G movies. We didn't have cable. I think the only station we had was the channel 7 and channel 11,
the local
channels. So we didn't have TV. So I just thought it was a rated R. I knew what a rated R movie was because I knew I wasn't allowed to watch them. And that's what I thought he was playing for me. So then in the 8th grade, the same people came to this health class. And that's when I realized he showed me pornography. Every person in those movies he played were naked.
Did in 7th grade when you found out that it was sexual assault, you came to that realization, did it become heavier for you?
Oh, yeah. Burden? Yes. Yes, that's when I felt like, oh, I did something to make him want to do this to me. It was all my fault. I knew that what he did was because of me. I just knew it in 7th grade. So that was heavy. That was really heavy. But I was really good at pretending like every day was a good day. No one would have known that I was having a hard day.
One did know.
No.
Except for you and him.
That's right.
And then in 8th grade, when you found out that what he was showing was pornography. Mm-hmm.
That was a whole nother level of, I am bad. Like, the shame is indescribable that you feel from being sexually abused. But then on top of that, the pornography brings on a whole new level of shame.
Why did you feel shame from that?
If I would have told sooner, if I would have told the very first time it happened, my sister and my brother would never would have seen the pornography either. I knew that they saw the pornography, and I was hoping, my sister was young enough, but I was hoping that she had forgotten. But in talking to her just a few days ago, she remembers, and for her, triggers are sounds. She remembers the images, but I was hoping that she had forgotten. I've never talked to my brother about the pornography.
It's interesting how some of our most traumatic experiences are the ones that we
don't talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I could bring it up to him now. I was with him a few weeks ago and I wanted to talk to him about it because I knew I'd be coming here, but I didn't know if his wife knew.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if his kids knew.
So how long was it until you were able to finally tell someone?
I told my 9th grade year for me was almost over. It was March of my 9th grade year. I was 15. I knew I couldn't tell anybody until I was no longer angry with him. So I forgave him. I couldn't take away what he did. What he did was his choice. It wasn't my choice. I didn't choose to see pornography. I didn't choose for him to touch me. I didn't choose any of that. So that's when I knew. And I forgave him. And it took me another maybe 6 months after forgiving him to actually
Get the courage to.
I didn't know how to tell. It just wasn't something you talked about. You just didn't talk about it. And if someone said something, it was like that was the end of the conversation. There was no chatter about it after that. It was done. And I didn't know how. I didn't know who to tell. I didn't know who to go to. I didn't know if they would believe me. It was easier for me just to know and no one else to know. And I'll be okay. And that's the end. But I didn't know. I just felt like my parents, it was almost became a burden that I couldn't do on my own anymore. So I had a religion teacher who I, thankfully, he allowed me the opportunity to trust him. I kept my eye on him all year. I was wondering if he was trustworthy, and he was. And I'm so grateful for him in allowing me that opportunity to trust him, because he believed me. I didn't go up to him and say, hey, you know, I was sexually abused. He had a lesson where he had this jar on his desk, and he said, I feel like a lot of you are carrying some heavy burdens. Today I'm going to allow you to write a question, anonymous question, and tomorrow we're going to discuss these. What would be the next class? So we had the class every other day. And so I didn't write it in class, my questions. I didn't want anyone to see it. So I went home. I was like, huh, I got to disguise my handwriting. You know, so I wrote it in cursive with my left hand because I'm right-handed. And I'm like, this is really messy, but it's fine. And then I put it in there. And it was one of the first questions he pulled out. I was like, he's probably not even going to, you know, see the question anyways. He only has an hour to read 35 questions.
Did he read them out loud?
He read them out loud. Yes. This one, mine, he didn't read it out loud at first. He read it and then his eyes filled up with tears and then he read it out loud. He did not answer it. So he put it aside, and then I think it was about a week later, he pulled me aside after class and asked me if it was me. And I first told him no. And then I started crying. And then he assured me he believed me, but he did say that I have to tell my parents. And I didn't know that by law he had to tell, the police had to get involved. I was not educated enough on all of that. And he asked if he could call my mom, and he did. He called my mom, and my mom took me on a drive. And that's where I have conversations with my kids now. If I have something to talk to them about, I'm like, let's go for a drive. I want an ice cream cone. let's go get in the car. And give me your phone, because I don't want you texting anybody. And we'll go in the car, and that's where we have conversation. And that's what my mom did. She brought me in the car, and we went for a drive. And I didn't know how. I hadn't yet used the words. I've written it, but I had never actually said out loud, I was sexually abused. I never had said that. And I couldn't say it to my mom. Because I knew she was going to feel what I had felt for the past 3 years. And I couldn't fathom my mom and my dad feeling that pain. So my mom just guessed. She just started asking questions, and it turned into, were you sexually abused? And then by who? And I made her guess. And she guessed. And that's how my parents found out.
It's a heavy thing.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot, but it's something that has to be talked about.
Agreed. And that's why we are grateful for you being here today. Now, going back to when you were finally able to tell another person, when you wrote that down and you gave it to your teacher, how did it feel to finally tell someone else?
Well, part of me was hoping he wouldn't ever reach mine. So when I saw that it was mine, my heart sank. I was like, this is it. Everyone's going to know how bad I am now. And that's not what happened. for me, I it makes me so sad to hear of people who aren't believed, and I know that happens. Thankfully for me, there was none of that, and that was my biggest fear, was people are going to think I'm bad, and people aren't going to believe me, and neither of those things happened. People now, if people hear me, they'll say things like, well, now I know why you're the way you are.
What do you mean by that? I
don't really know, because I don't know if I would be any different if it didn't happen to me. I have no idea. But I'm protective. I don't let my kids roam the neighborhood. If they go to a friend's house, it's by invitation. There's just things I don't allow. And yeah. People will say things like, oh, well, now I get why you're the way you are. I'm like, I don't even understand what that means, because I probably would be this way anyways. I don't know. I don't know.
Right.
But I'm a helicopter mom. I want to know.
I think helicopter mom kind of has like a negative connotation.
Sure.
But it's more like you're just protective.
I'm just protective.
You're aware.
Mm-hmm.
You're helping your kids be competent. You're a realist, right?
Absolutely. I do phone checks. My kids have phones. And it's random phone checks. I have an 18-year-old, and I still am like, hand me your phone. I need to check your checks. She's 18, but I pay the bill. So I will check her phone. They just know that. So there's no... If they're hiding stuff from me, they're really good at it, because I check their histories. I check...
And at least you're doing your part, right?
I feel like maybe as much as I can.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Have you seen that... Speaking of technology and kids, we're kind of getting on a tangent here, but did you see that video done by a software company called Bark? And there was a mom who went undercover. She looks young.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably, I don't know how old she is, but mm-hmm. she looks young mm-hmm. anyway. And she goes undercover and they take photos. It was a whole thing. It was a long process. There was a lot of detail put into it. They took photos. They photoshopped them for her to look younger.
Mm-hmm.
And then they created a profile. Have you seen that?
I have seen this.
You have?
Actually, just like last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just going viral right now. It was mm-hmm. just released recently, mm-hmm. so it's not a surprise saw it last week. But yeah, we're going to link that.
The amount of information that she found was unreal.
Yep. Like within a minute
mm-hmm.
and 26 seconds, if I'm remembering correctly,
right.
there was people on her account trying to groom her.
Yes.
In a sense.
Well, my kids have no social media. My two oldest have Instagram, and they each I don't allow it until they're 15. So my 14-year-old now, I'm like, if you write me a 20-page persuasive essay on why you need Instagram and I'm persuaded, maybe. It's been 2 years and she has not written the essay. But she can follow whoever she wants on mine. That way I can, but I have my kids' Instagrams are linked to me. So sorry, kids, now you know. But I see everything. I see every inbox. I see everything. So maybe that's an invasion of their privacy, but that's my right as their mom. So,
well, I think what this company does, who did this undercover project.
Yeah.
It's a company that basically does what you're doing.
Yeah.
But it's an algorithm that does it for you, kind of thing.
Right.
Anyway, so it can build trust within the relationship.
I trust my kids. Yeah. They've given me so far no reason not to. I think they're a little bit scared of me, which is good. I'm not mad about that, because I would rather them be scared out of love. They know I love them.
Yeah, of
so
course.
Yeah.
The other thing, so jumping back to your story.
You're good,
now.
Yeah.
So you said you felt regret, a little bit of regret the first time the teacher, when he grabbed the paper, you're
mm-hmm.
like, oh no.
Mm-hmm. I honestly, part of me wanted to run up there and be like, no, actually don't read that one. That one's mine and it's not worth reading. But I was like paralyzed. Like, I want to run up there, but I don't want to run up there. I hope he just can't read my handwriting, because it's my left hand and it's cursive and it's really bad. But it was legible enough that he knew exactly what it said.
And then the other question I had was when you told your mom or I guess you didn't tell your mom, you kind of had her guess.
Yeah.
But that conversation happened.
It took me probably 10 years after that to actually be able to say I was sexually abused. Like I just couldn't actually say the words. Yeah.
What did you feel? Because I know in some traumatic experiences like that, like the room can start to spin.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a traumatizing thing. Were you calm with your mom, or did you feel?
Yeah, because
anxious?
I had no more anger towards him. I don't respect him. But I don't wish ill things for him. His life hasn't been good. There's been more heartache in his life than. But I feel like kind of deserves it all. I don't want to, that sounds awful. Sounds like I'm holding a grudge. I'm not, but I feel like sometimes your choices for good or for bad are going to result in the consequences of your life for good or for bad. So I knew my mom and dad would be really angry with him, and I knew they were going to feel how I felt. And that was the hardest part for me, was watching them feel how I felt for the past 3 years. My siblings were all confused. But all of our stories aligned. All of our stories were the same. I know, because the police did get involved, and we did take him to court. And I did testify through writing. I was behind, it looked like a mirror. I could see him. I didn't want him to see me because I looked different. And part of me still believed the threats. So I didn't want him to see what I look like now, rather than I did when I was 6, 7, 8 years old. So I testified through writing. My mom, if you want to see a strong woman, it was my mom the day of court. And that woman had the paper, and she walked in there with the greatest amount of confidence that I've ever seen in her. And she looked him straight in the eyes and just told him exactly how she felt. And for her, I think that was really healing. I didn't need to do that. But for her, watching her and how strong she was has actually gotten me through a lot of hard things. When I think of, this is going to be really hard, but I'll be just like my mom was in that courtroom. I didn't understand how the laws worked with any type of abuse, really. We didn't have smartphones. I couldn't Google. There was no Siri. It was all in dictionary and encyclopedias. So when I heard my mom talking on the phone about the statute of limitation, she was talking to the detective, and it was shortly after I had said something. I didn't know what statute of limitations meant. So the next day at school, I went into the library and looked it up. And once I realized what it was, I realized, because that day I had to write a statement, I realized I don't need to tell him everything. It's not going to do anyone any good to know everything.
So after you went to the library, you decided, okay, I don't need to give all the details.
Right.
Because that, you have to relive that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a lot, because I didn't know the police had to get involved. For me, it was just, I was just writing a note and getting it off my chest. I didn't know anyone really had to know it was me. So it was just a whirlwind of, what have I done? I should have never said anything.
Did you regret it?
Yeah. I did regret it. Once I knew the police were involved, I had to talk to detectives. They were asking me all kinds of questions that I didn't know, nor did I want to answer. Luckily, I didn't have to go and get an exam by a doctor, because it happened so long ago. But there was a lot of, I felt like very interrogated. And I didn't really want anyone to know details. So once I knew there was a statute of limitations, I wrote down one instance. So that's all he was only charged off of one instance. And even off that one instance, had there been no statute of limitations, it would have been an 18-year sentence, and he only got 3. So I feel like his crime was terrible, but he would have gotten the same punishment telling everything as he did with the one instance. So I didn't need to put my parents through that.
Have you had conversations since then? Do your parents know?
No. Nobody does. I haven't told my husband everything. I just feel like, honestly, my husband and I talk about it, because sometimes it's triggers, and he always knows why.
Of course.
But he doesn't even know details. I just feel like the details of what he did, just, I don't even think about it.
Right.
It's not, I don't need to think about it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Gotcha. Seeing him being held accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Did that help you in the healing process, or had you already forgiven to the point where that didn't really change anything?
That was helpful for my parents. My parents needed to see him handcuffed. I mean, seeing him, that was hard. Seeing him, like, I never saw him face to face, but I walked into the courtroom. I was with my sister, my brother-in-law, and my dad, and my mom. Pretty sure that's everyone that was there. And I walked in, and I saw him, and he looked the exact same to me. the exact same, maybe a little heavier, but the exact same, otherwise same hair, same everything. And like, that was hard seeing him there, but kind of because the fear of, he knows that I told people, was there. But seeing him handcuffed and walked, that was good for my parents. For me, I believe God will take care of him. I don't have to.
And the fact that you had to face him again, mm-hmm. that can be very challenging, mm-hmm. I imagine. Mm-hmm. And from what I hear from other people who have experienced similar things. Mm-hmm. And that's oftentimes one reason why people won't tell the truth about yeah. their experience. Because they don't want the police to get involved. They don't want to face these people in court. So oftentimes, you know, that number 1 in 10 that we mentioned, 1 in 10 kids will be sexually assaulted before they're 18.
It's more than 1 in 10. That's just people who've told. Facing him was, it was hard. I didn't see him face to face, but just seeing him there back in the state I lived in, I didn't know. It took 2 years. From the time, yeah, from the time I told, to the time of court was a long time. And I didn't know.
Did that raise your anxiety during mm-hmm. those 2 years?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I thought that, oh, this is it. This is it for me. Like there was definitely things that I didn't, that made me nervous, very nervous. I worked, and so if I needed to walk to my car in the dark, I always made sure somebody was with me. I just always felt like there was a target on my back. But when I saw him and saw him handcuffed, for me, it wasn't super necessary, but it was for my parents. They needed to see that I never will feel like a 3-year sentence is justified, but my parents needed to see him handcuffed and taken. I think that they needed him to know that they knew, too.
You're a person, you're a good example because you've been through some challenging stuff. Needless to say. And then you've addressed that and you've moved forward. So I think you're such a great example to other people who have experienced sexual abuse because there is hope, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I was at dinner with a group of probably, I don't know, 15 or so women. And for some reason, sexual abuse came up and I didn't know why. And so we were just talking about it, and I don't talk about it a lot. I don't tell very many people, and the people that I do tell have a lot of questions. And so naturally they ask me the questions, and that's totally fine. It's really hard for people to understand or fathom such things happening to children, right? And so this one of the women said, I just think sexual abuse would ruin their life. Your life is ruined. If you've been sexually abused, your life is over. And that kind of, for me, stung a little. I'm like, oh, I feel like my life's pretty good. And so I looked at her, and she not knowing your experience. Yeah. And I went to high school with her. So through all of the telling my teacher to telling my parents to the detectives getting involved, none of my friends knew. None of them. Nobody really knew. I think some people speculated because I started crying a lot at school because I was, anytime I saw a cop car, I was always like, are they coming for me? Like, do they need to talk to me? And who's going to know? Who knows? I always feared who knew because I told my parents, please don't tell anybody. And so I always feared that people who knew were telling other people just because I thought people were going to think that I was bad, it was my fault. So I think any type of shame a victim feels is unnecessary, but you can't get rid of it. Yeah. You just can't get rid of it. And so anytime I saw a police car drive by the school, I thought they were coming to talk to me so I became kind of paranoid, but none of my friends knew. And so we were at this dinner and she says, their life is ruined. And I looked at her and I just said, so are you saying my life is ruined? And she said, well, no, it didn't happen to you. It happened to me. And this is what happened. When we were in ninth grade, I told my parents. And then sophomore year, I was talking to detectives every other week. And then junior year is when I had to face him in court. But you guys didn't know anything. I didn't tell any of you anything. And she just looked at me and I said, yeah, my life is good. Really good.
Yeah. There's a lot of hope.
Yeah.
Because in the moment, looking back to maybe 8th grade when you found out, when the kind of severity hit you.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to telling the truth finally.
Yeah.
At that moment, did it feel hopeless to you at all?
It was just scary. I don't remember feeling hopelessness. I felt scared. I felt like no one, if anyone finds out, no boys are going to want to date me because I'm now used goods. I'm unworthy of anybody's love. Like, I did feel a lot of that through the shame process.
Yeah.
But I don't remember feeling hopeless. I knew there was light at the end of the tunnel. I just knew the tunnel was really long at that moment. The tunnel was dark, but I knew there was light. I knew there would be light.
Because I've heard some people who have experienced childhood sexual abuse, they've said that it's a lifelong sentence.
It's definitely something that there's triggers almost every day.
Okay.
It's just something.
I wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah.
Because you said it doesn't ruin you, right?
No. I don't think you're ruined.
I guess there's a difference between...
But it doesn't mean you don't deal with it.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to make
a choice.
So
you would agree that it's a lifelong sentence,
absolutely.
But you're... Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I have four daughters. Statistics prove that one of them, right?
That's true. One in four.
Right. So that's a trigger. Every day, I'm like, it's one of my girls, likely. Yeah, I mean, I see someone that looks like him. I'm like, oh, did he send someone for me? Like, there's always kind of that fear.
Yeah.
I know it's unrealistic fear, but it's still like my childhood self coming out. Yeah, no, it's something definitely you have to wake up in the morning and you have to choose how you're going to deal with it, because it is a lifelong sentence, but it doesn't have to be a bad sentence or a sad sentence or a hopeless sentence.
Thanks for pressing forward through your challenges, because one of the benefits is that you're helping a lot of people through sharing. So we appreciate that.
Thank you. And I would say 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to. I just don't want listeners to feel like, well, I'm not quite there yet. I wasn't either. It's not something that's easy to talk about.
Right.
So I totally understand that.
And everyone's journey is different.
Absolutely. All I can say is there is hope, and you are worthy, and you are lovable.
And I hope that anyone listening who has experienced abuse, I hope they take that to heart, that there is hope, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Well, Barbie, thank you so much for being with us today. We want to leave you with the opportunity to have the last word during this conversation. Is there anything you'd like to leave our audience with?
All I want to say, I guess, is if your story sounds a lot like mine and you haven't said anything, you don't have to go at it alone. Just don't have to go at it alone. It's hard to go at it alone. So find somebody. And if the somebody's me, come find me. I will help you.
Can people reach out to us to get your information?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
So once again, Barbie, you're amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography, by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. If you want to learn more about today's guest and the conversation we had, you can check out the links included with this episode. Again, big thanks to you for listening to this conversation. As you go about your day, we invite you to increase your self-awareness, look both ways, check your blind spots, and consider before consuming.